As I said at the beginning, the well-publicised estimate of over a billion animals being lost to the wildfires was arrived at by very well-qualified research artists, one of them sitting opposite me in the studio, who've been monitoring the numbers and the accompanying destruction of habitat. Last week, the superb lyrebird and forest owl populations and their habitats have to be added to the list. But how is this reality going to be tackled? What are the sorts of programs which have been defunded? And what will the financial outlay be needed to save as many as we can of the threatened species? Two fellows sitting opposite me, both members of the Australian Academy of Science, and I highlight that point because on social media, questions have been raised as to the credentials of some scientists, and I would like the record to show. One is Professor David Lindenmayer from the Fenner School of Environment and Society at the ANU College of Science, and he joins us again from our Canberra studio. He's got over 30 years' experience. He's one of the most qualified scientists in Australia and has to be amongst the top 1% globally. 775 peer-reviewed scientific articles in international journals, plus 47 books on Australian and global ecology. And as of now, also the winner of a koala stamp. Welcome back, David. With me in Sydney is Chris Dickman. Chris is a professor in terrestrial ecology from Sydney Uni. Like David, over 30 years' experience in the area of biological and environmental sciences, past president of the Australian Mammal Society and the Royal Zoological Society of New South Wales, and past chair of the New South Wales Scientific Community. At last count, Chris has written or edited 20 books and authored more than 450 journal articles and similar stuff. So, you know, these blokes are heavy hitters. Oh, Chris is the recipient of several national and international awards, including the New South Wales Plant and Animal Scientist of the Year in 2010. Chris, it's nice of you to come and join me in the studio, in my lonely outpost. Before the wildfire season, we had, of course, the highest rate of mammal extinctions in the world, at least 34 lost after record levels of land clearing, habitat destruction. Is there any doubt in your mind that climate change has exacerbated the situation?
No, I think it's pretty clear that climate change has really been driving a lot of the changes we've been seeing, particularly over the last fire season. One of the reasons for saying that is that these sorts of changes that we've been seeing were predicted by climate models that were generated many years ago. And of course, the most well-known of these is the 2008 Gano report. And in that, the drying and heating trends in southern Australia were outlined very clearly, as were some predictions that when you had a confluence of extreme dry, extreme long-term drought and heating conditions, you'd have the recipe for the sort of intense wildfires that we're seeing now. And interestingly, Gano nominated the year 2020 when we'd first see these.
I mentioned lyrebirds and forest owl populations in introducing you. According to BirdLife Australia, 19 bird species have had more than half their known habitats hit by fire, especially Kangaroo Island.
Yes, that's right. Kangaroo Island has really been in the firing line. It's lost so much of its forest, woodland and heathland habitat, particularly at the western end of the island, which was the real biological gem, the repository for so much wildlife diversity. And it does seem that the fires there burnt particularly intensely. We're heading down there next month to take a look, but the early reports coming in suggest that much of the forest has been reduced to ash. So even eucalypts that usually will survive a moderate burn and actually flourish after a fire, these have been just reduced to nothing.
David, according to the government, we have nearly 2,000 endangered species, plants, birds, mammals, invertebrates, reptiles, fish, etc. And you and I also did a detour into, the fungal underworld. What has led to Australia losing more biodiversity than any other developed nation?
Well, I think there's a number of factors here, Philip. Certainly the extent of land clearing in Australia has been really quite profound. But as many people will probably realise, Australia's also been incredibly hard hit by an extraordinary number of introduced animals. So foxes and cats have had an enormous impact. But now we're seeing major issues with donkeys, camels, deer, a whole range of species that have huge impacts on ecosystems and the species that occur in those systems.
Back to you, Chris. Your estimate of a billion animals killed has, of course, gone global. But it doesn't include the numbers of animals likely to die post-fire, does it?
It does, but it's only for three groups. So it's a huge number, but it's still a very conservative figure. So the estimate of a billion comes from looking at the average densities in New South Wales primarily and extending into Victoria for terrestrial mammals. So that's not including the bats even.
Yeah.
Birds and reptiles.
The reptiles or the insects, of course, that we were discussing last week as well. Okay, Chris, what is the scenario facing many of these mammals, birds, reptiles in the aftermath?
For the survivors, it's potentially quite grim. If they manage to go underground into a burrow or between some fissures in the rocks, cracks in the soil, they'll emerge when it's safe to do so, when it's cooled down enough, onto a surface that provides no food or water or resources of any kind, and certainly no shelter. So for many of these smaller and medium-sized mammals, as David was saying, one of the big threats that's taken care of a lot of Australian biodiversity, the feral cat and the red fox will be there to pick them off.
Preparing for tonight, David, I got quite angry because I realised that back in 2017, you wrote about the dismantling of Australia's long-term ecological research network. Why was this network so critical for scientific understanding?
Well, the long-term ecological research network provided a really good understanding of how our ecosystems are performing, how they're changing through time, also how the species in those systems are travelling and why they might be declining or increasing, how they respond to fire, how they're responding to climate change. So it was a really critical part of Australia's environmental infrastructure. And it wasn't very expensive. It was about $1.5 million a year. But
well, why the hell was it canned?
Well, there were significant cutbacks in the Department of Education. And there was also a serious level of mismanagement by another body that was responsible for managing that network. And so it was disbanded. Chris Stickman also had desert plots in that work. So Chris was a member of it. But there were plots in the tropical savannas, tropical rainforests, cool, wet, temperate forests right across a whole range of ecosystems, and it was a really valuable part of Australia's environmental infrastructure.
And I understand it was also part of a global network in environmental research and monitoring.
That's right. In fact, it was a model that people in other countries from China right through Europe had adopted as an approach to tackle the issues of biodiversity change, environmental change. And it performed really well, but unfortunately it was axed. And I've been calling on the federal minister today to revive that long-term network because it's critical to understand how animals and plants and ecosystems will recover after fire.
This is Ailing L on your radio, online and via podcast. And my guests are scientists, professors David Lindenmayer and Chris Dickman. It must break your heart, Chris, the cancellation of this modest but all-important project.
It does. And as David said, these sorts of long-term monitoring setups are really crucial. They're crucial for tracking how species are doing, how whole ecological systems are doing, And you can also gauge the effects of management as well. If you're if you have a disturbance, you can attempt to intervene and mitigate the effects of the disturbance, whether it's a fire or ferals or something else.
Well, that leads me, David, to raise the fact that the US, also a part of this international network, has had great success in delisting up to 39 endangered species. What's the key?
Their key is that they spend about $1.6 billion a year, and we know that as with an increase in spending, there's a reduction in loss of species. And in fact, it can be very successful and species do indeed recover. And the Americans have shown this time and time again with a whole range of species, ranging from wolves to black-footed ferrets and a whole range of extraordinary animals. So fantastic.
Many of the listeners will know the story of wolves, but what are some of the other ones that you mentioned?
The black-footed ferret is an extraordinary animal. It was thought to be extinct. It was rediscovered. And then it was discovered that there was a disease in the population. So there was a major intervention. Animals were taken into captivity. New areas were set aside as habitat for the species. And it's a wonderful story of success in conservation and recovery.
Your estimates about what we need to spend exclude what efforts might happen with local governments, NGOs and the private sector?
That's correct. We estimate that the current spending in Australia on threatened species to be around about $120 million a year, which is roughly one-tenth of what we think is going to be needed to recover species using the American example.
It's tokenism, isn't it, really? It's just a...
Well, if you look in comparison, Australians spend twice that amount of money on caring for their pet cats every year.
I'm letting a minute's silence tick by while we take that on board. How do you keep your sanity, Chris, when you see the scale of devastation around you and the nonsensical lack of responsibility?
It is pretty hard at times. There's the scientific side of you that says, well, we've really got to get out there and try to quantify what's going on and try to come up with solutions about what to do. Then there's the emotional side, because though the numbers tell you one story, there are all the animals that are behind them, and if you sort of know them up close and personal.
There was an image the other night of the hailstorm wrecking the glasshouses that the CSIRO people were using to grow plants that might be better drought resistant and so on. Now, that's classically known as an act of God, but we're seeing the same sort of havoc wreaked on scientific programs by acts of government.
Yes, that's right, Philip. We know that, for example, since 2013, there's been a 37% reduction in budget spending by the Australian government in the environment. So what that means is that the budget spend has declined from roughly 9 cents in every $100 spent by government to 3 cents in every $100 spent by government. And the reality is that our environment is now responding to the massive underinvestment that we've had in the last decade.
I remember my old friend Barry Jones, when he was Minister for Science, tackling the science community and saying that they were wimps when it came to self-promotion, that they weren't, in other words, they weren't very good at being political advocates. Well, at this moment, you've got so much leverage in your side, haven't you, Chris?
That's right. I think one of the bright sides, perhaps, to come out of this terrible event, if there is a bright side to come out at all, is that the international community has focused its attention on Australia. Australia itself has turned its focus on the effects of the wildfires on wildlife, and I think we've got a fantastic opportunity now to redirect that interest and concern towards much better and hopefully much better resource programs.
David, what about legislative reform as well as funding increases?
Well, at the moment there are proposals on the table to revise the what's called the EPPC Act, which is the key federal government legislation around protection of the environment. And there's been a lot of discussion about reduction of green tape and the like. I think it's really important to rethink some of these things in the context of just how much pressure the Australian environment's under, how much pressure Australian wildlife is under, and what's really needed to be done to restore and maintain what we have already. We can't keep knocking back species and knocking back the environment the way we've been doing. It simply won't be able to persist in anything like its current form if we keep doing this.
Chris, what do you think on this?
I completely agree. I think we're completely out of balance at the moment. We've really gone down the development pathway to a far greater extent than I think is wise, at the expense of the environment. It's given lip service in much of what we do, certainly at the state levels in many parts of the country, and at the Commonwealth level too.
Well, before we finish, I want to go back to this issue of the ferals. I got myself into terrible trouble on the program 20 years ago when I admitted to shooting feral cats at the farm because it just infuriated me to see the havoc they were wreaking. But as you and David have pointed out, ferals are a huge issue, and yet people, it's very hard to persuade people that feral animals have got to be, well, annihilated.
Yes, perhaps I could. In 1996, I wrote a fairly lengthy report looking at the impacts of feral cats in Australia. And as a result of that, got bucket loads of hate mail and death threats. Now, there has been a lot of action trying to remove feral cats from large areas, including areas as large as Kangaroo Island, 4,400 square kilometres. There's an effort going on at the moment to reduce and remove cats from there. And that's pretty much accepted. So I think it is possible
you
to get change.
You think opinion is changing?
Yeah, it's taken 20 years.
Hasn't
perhaps
changed
more.
With the Brumbies, has it?
No, that's another tricky issue, and hopefully it won't take 20 years to get some sense into that particular argument.
I think one of the key issues here is that a lot of feral animals actually do even more damage in these highly fire-damaged areas. So there's what we call an interaction between the impacts of fire and the impacts of feral animals like foxes, cats, deer, horses. And this is actually the time to step in and do some serious control when we need to offset these massive impacts that they will otherwise have in these damaged areas.
Gentlemen, I thank you for your time. Professors Chris Dickman from the University of Sydney.
Thanks, Philip.
And David Lindenmeyer from the ANU. Thanks for coming back, David, and thanks for coming in, Chris.